Well, I have heard this one before, unfortunately. I've been hearing this one a lot lately. Unfortunately, Tori and I got to see it firsthand. So welcome to the post-Purdue 12 Saturdays podcast. We're going to kind of rip through this one because, well, what else can we say that we haven't said a bunch of times already? Also, we have just an amazing guest that we want to leave plenty of time for. So I'm James Bladel.
I'm Bill Delahant.
And Tori's here as well, as always.
All right. So, Bill, as the guy who was, let's start with you, since you were arm's length removed from the scene there in Kinnick. Thoughts, impressions, convulsions?
Plenty. Nothing unexpected. I guess the moment of the game where I knew we were going to lose was three timeouts in our pockets, slightly under a minute, but 20 yards from field goal territory. Miguel Rosinos has a leg on him. And classic Kirk, Captain Cautious, kneeled her, took her into halftime. And that was I knew we were going to lose. And then we played like we were going to lose the game.
You know, Bill, it's interesting that you said that's when you knew it was going to lose. You're usually a little bit more pessimistic than me, but Jim was sitting next to me, and I can tell you, I knew we were going to lose as soon as we forced a three and out and then inexplicably decided for the first time all season to go for a massive punt block, rough the punter, Purdue goes down and scores 7 points. And Jim, how just incensed was I at that moment?
Yeah, when I say we, pretty much everybody in section 103 and 104 and parts of 105 heard about that one for a while from Torrey, and he was right. I mean, he called it. It was.
Did you guys do any booing at the game?
I didn't boo, but here's what's emblematic
you know, I did.
Of that.
I did, and I'll tell you when. Only once, and it wasn't booing the players. It was the play call of Stanley's draw on third and six. I mean, we needed that possession. If nothing else,
I think it was nine.
Third and nine. And we got a tree of a quarterback, and he's going to go and pick up 9 yards up the middle. And it just he fooled nobody. And look, it's not that he didn't try and he didn't give it his best. And you know, bless him for doing everything he could. But who calls that? I mean, you don't call that on PlayStation against a toddler. I don't understand why you would call that against another D1 coach. That to me, and that was an indication that
it wasn't our day.
It just wasn't. You know, the lights weren't on up in the press box because that was at least you really needed to stretch out that possession. You didn't need to score. You needed to get the defense a break. I think that was right after they'd been torched twice for touchdowns. Whatever side of the field Josh Jackson wasn't on was just gassed. Just give him a breath here, and we just didn't do it.
Yeah, one thing that's maddening to me, and I think that very special teams play with the botched punt block is emblematic, is this team is just not very football smart, and they're prone to physical errors like drops. But they miss blocking assignments. They don't catch a punt when you should catch a punt. They don't take the right guy in coverage on zone. It's just, and it's interesting to me that I feel like this team is trying really hard and has a lot of heart and it has a lot of talent. I just think they're not very bright in a football sense.
The situational awareness isn't there, is what you're saying.
Yeah, they make just mind-numbingly dumb plays on a consistent basis, often at the worst time possible. That's really, they've been uncompetitive the last 2 weeks for the most part.
Yeah, and I don't know, Bill, if you have anything to pile on to that. I mean, to me, what I'm seeing here against Wisconsin and to some extent against Northwestern and Michigan State is pretty much what I saw in the spring game, is a team that just looks lost. They have talent individually, like Tori said. There's certainly no shortage of heart and effort, but they're kind of running all over the field without a purpose.
Yeah, I got hours to pile on there, but it's not novel. It's not what anybody hasn't heard before. So I'm down to flush it if you guys are, because our guest tonight was stellar.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, I think the first thing we should probably get out of the way as a check the box activity is that nobody, you know, we all called for Purdue. We offered to Iowa to win. Nobody picked Purdue, so none of our picks to click showed up at all. I guess we could sort of say Noah Fant did okay because he scored, but he also had a couple of crucial drops. So I think no points awarded for the second week in a row, and the Gnome stays put. So let's flush it and move on to our guest. We want to spend a lot of time with this guest because it was just unlike the team on the field. We really hit it out of the park with this week's guest.
All right, with us this week on 12 Saturdays is Sweet Lou Montgomery. During his time at Iowa from 89 to 92, he rushed for 1,093 yards and 17 touchdowns. Lou, it's so great to have you on the show. How are you doing this week?
Man, I'm fantastic. I'm doing well. Thanks a lot for having me on.
Excellent. And I called you Sweet Lou, which was your nickname during your time at Iowa. Right off the bat, where did that name come from?
That was a nickname given to me in the seventh grade. I was a big huge Walter Payton fan, and wanted
Sweetness.
To wear number 34. And by wearing 34, you know, I my buddies would always say, you know, hey, that was a really sweet move you made there, man. That was sweet, you know, and that was kind of the lingo back then. Back in the seventh grade. So everybody just kind of started putting together, you know, Sweet Lou, you know, and it kind of stuck. And that's where it all came from, back in the seventh grade.
Very nice. Well, you know, this is Tori here. Speaking of the lingo back in the day, you know, you were one of my favorite players because you and I actually exactly matched the years we were at school. I went up to Iowa City in 89. From Bettendorf and graduated. I didn't graduate to 93. I was a little slow, but you know, just remember some of those great games. And that was a loaded backfield back then, man. I mean, there was you, Nick Bell, Tony Stewart. You know, tell me what it was. You know, and people may not remember, but you could have gone anywhere. If I remember, you had offers from Michigan, Notre Dame, all of that. You're a Waterloo yeah. kid. What made you want to go to Iowa and play for Coach Fry?
Well, I think one of the things that really attracted me to the University of Iowa was obviously Coach Fry. And I think when student athletes are making a decision on which school they're going to attend, they really look at least I looked at a combination of things. Obviously the coaching staff, but also the university. And I felt like being a hometown product that I wanted to stay home. I wanted my parents and family to have an opportunity to see me play. And I really felt like that was a great fit for me. So not only did I love the university, I also bought into the system of Coach Fry. And ironically, when I got there, I was number 7 on the depth chart at the running back spot. And the way this kind of all transpired was one day I was looking at the depth chart and I said, I'm number 7. Right now behind Nick Bell, Tony Stewart, Mike Saunders, Chet Davis, Leroy Smith, all of these guys, Marvin Lampkin, and I'm sitting at number 7, and I noticed that there was only 3 fullbacks, and that was David Hudson, Richard Bass, and Nick Bell. And I said, I can go from number 7 to 4, and if I do the math right, Hudson is a senior, which means I'm going to be redshirted anyway, so he's going to graduate. Richard Bass is a junior, which means he'll be a senior. And in talking to Nick, he really wants to play tailback. So I figured that if I moved to fullback, I could probably play 3 to 4 years straight and not have to compete with those guys in the backfield. And so that's what I did. I moved the fullback. I felt like I could eat whatever I want. I could gain a bunch of weight, man, and be the big bulldozing fullback. And that's what I did.
Well, the nice thing about that with Fry is he didn't mind feeding you guys the ball also, throwing the ball, letting you run a little bit. You really don't see that too much in today's game. We should have a new fullback appreciation, I think.
I do. I think that is so true. You know, fullbacks, man, anymore are kind of the dying breed. We're like the old Cadillacs, man, with the big, you know, big gigantic Cadillacs and Lincolns of the world that are way back in the day. They were huge. We were the kind of those prima donnas, man. But, you know, our backfield was unique in the sense that, you know, we had some talent. You know, I was actually a tailback playing the fullback position. And what Coach Fry and Coach Jackson recognized was that what a dual threat. You got two tailbacks in the backfield. And what I was able to do when I was there, I was able to catch the football out of the backfield, but I was also able to take it the distance if I needed to. And I was quick enough to where, you know, a couple, you know, little trap play up the middle, I could take for 15, 20 yards versus 2 or 3 yards in a cloud of dust. So it quickly became an extra weapon where we realistically, from a mentality standpoint, I was a tailback playing the fullback position.
Yeah, I think we were hoping to see some of that a little bit this year with Wadley and Butler, and didn't really materialize. But one of my favorite memories, Lou, of watching you play is that every time you got a carry, or even if you scored, especially the whole stadium would just erupt, you know, and saying Lou, you know, and it was awesome to be a part of that. So that's one of my memories. I don't know what sort of memories. You were part of that 90 Rose Bowl team that came out of nowhere. What other, you know, yeah, highlights or memories do you have from your any particular game or plays stand out?
Yeah, that kind of transformed. I remember the first time I heard it. And if you can imagine 70, 80,000 people saying Lou, and you're in the center of the field or you're on the field, it actually sounds like boo. I pick up 15, 20 yards on a long run for the first time, and I come back to the huddle and I hear this boo. And I come to the huddle and I'm like, Nick, man, I just picked up 20 yards, man, and people are booing me. And he was like, no, they're not booing you. They're saying Lou. And, man, my head about popped out of the helmet after I heard that. You know, that was just incredible. But I guess that really speaks to the fan base and what a tremendous fan base we have here in Iowa. And I think it really put the explanation point on why I chose the University of Iowa and how passionate I was to play for my home state and how passionate the fans are about their football here in Iowa City. And for me, having an opportunity to not only just be an athlete, but I was a student athlete, and being able to meet guys like yourselves on campus and really show the humbleness is really what I was always taught as a young player, you know. And probably one of my fondest memories as a Hawkeye was when we played Ohio State at Ohio State. And this was the year when the mass shootings had taken place on campus, and we had just landed in Ohio State, and Coach Fry gave us the news. And the decision was that we could either forfeit the game or we could somehow have some sort of tribute. So we took our emblems off of our helmets, and we just had those black helmets. And we went over there, and we beat Ohio State at Ohio State.
I remember that.
That was a very memorable game because it was a tough fought game, but you know, we dialed up some creativity, and you just don't go into Ohio State and beat Ohio State, and we were able to do it, and we just had a great nucleus of team of players on that football team, and what I probably enjoyed the most was, you know, none of us ever got too big headed in terms of how we played. You know, we just went out with a lot of grit and determination, and if we fell behind, we always knew that somebody was going to make a big play at any point in time. And we just had a certain level of confidence, but it was a cool, controlled kind of confidence. And that's probably my biggest memory at the University of Iowa. And obviously, walking out into the Rose Bowl, all the history that in the pageantry around playing in the Rose Bowl game and watching that game for so many years as a child growing up, and then finally having an opportunity to walk out on that field, was just an absolute rememberable experience for me. And so, yeah, those are the games that really stuck to mind for me. You know, Mike Saunders, who in my opinion was one of the best running backs to come out of there, probably underrated running back. Mike Saunders, man, we would be in the huddle. We played Purdue at Purdue, and this is a true story. We were in the huddle, and I think Purdue was beating us at the beginning of the game. And Mike comes in. They kick the ball off to us, and Mike and I are in the huddle. And Mike was like, "Hey, you want to put a little wager that I can take this thing 70, 80 yards?"
I was like, "Stop! Like, that's awesome."
I bet you $5. $5 take a distance. And if you replay that game on YouTube, Mike Saunders, he said, "Just give me a block. Just give me one block." And Mike took off for like 70, 80 yards. And he gets in the end zone. He's like, "Where's my money?" I was like, "Mike, man." I was like, all right. Let's go double
that. That's awesome.
Lou, I think I actually put that video up on YouTube. I know the game you're talking about. Love it.
Yeah.
He had that big game winner in Madison, too, didn't he? And against yeah. That was his home state, if I remember that. And some jerky Badger fan broke the side mirror of my Ford Escort after that game. But it was totally worth it.
Yeah. But that game at Madison, Mike was injured, and I actually started a tailback. They told me on Wednesday that Mike wouldn't be starting because I think he was injured. Marvin Lampkin was injured. And they said, "Lou, you got to play tailback." So I actually started that game at tailback, not knowing the tailback plays wholeheartedly. And so I go pretty much the whole game playing tailback. And then I think it came down to the wire. Like, we had like a minute left. And coach puts Mike in the game. I said, because we went into a 2-minute offense at the end, and we actually ended up beating him, and Mike scored the winning touchdown. So everybody's like high-fiving Mike and carrying Mike off the field, and I'm like, "Dude, I'm not going to carry this team the whole game. This is crazy, man. What about me?" I'm standing there like, "Are you guys serious?" Mike comes in for like four, five, six plays and a 2-minute offense, wins the freaking football game, and everybody's high-fiving Mike. And I'm like, "Man, I'm going back to fullback, man."
That's the life of a fullback, though, right, Lou? I mean, that's kind of the way it goes.
It is. It is totally the life of the fullback, man. You get no love. And I told Mike, I said, "Mike, when you get Preston Conference, man, just say, I want to give a little bit of credit to Lou for a job." Nothing. I did this. I was like, "Dude, what about me? Give your boy some love, man."
Oh, man. The other game that I really remember very vividly, I had a roommate who was from Decatur, Illinois, and he kind of pretended like he was an Iowa fan, but he was really an Illini fan in his heart.
Oh, yeah.
And if you guys remember, that the game at Illinois was basically to clinch that trip to the Rose Bowl, because I think you guys had already gone back-to-back, right, and beat Michigan and Michigan State. Am I remembering that right?
Yeah.
And so if you guys got down to Illinois, and Illinois was actually good that year, and they were favored, I think, and you guys just rolled them. Tell me about what the mindset going into that game was, because it seemed to me like you guys came out with some kind of purpose that I don't know that I've seen many Iowa teams have. Do you remember that evening very well?
Yeah, I actually did not play in that game. I'd actually dislocated my collarbone against Michigan State, but I remember the games leading up to that particular game. One of the things that Coach Fry did, which I thought was just so ingenious, was he brought all of his bowl rings in to one of our team meetings. So if you can imagine, I think they went to the Gator Bowl, all the Rose Bowl, all these bowl rings, and he set them on the top of the podium. And he said to us, and mind you, none of us had really had a ring per se. And, you know, these sparkling rings, the diamonds, and they had the Hawkeye in the middle. Some had the shape of a football and they're diamonds, huge rings. And he said to us, if you want one of these, you got to earn it. And at the end of his lecture, game preparation strategy, we all had an opportunity to pass them around the room and we got to touch them and feel them. And it just gave us a sense of, wow, we have a sense of purpose. You know, we're not playing for the individual on the back of our jersey. We're playing for the name that's on the front of our jersey. And that was Iowa. And one of the things that he always taught us was about Hawkeye tradition. You know, like for a long stretch there, I mean, we beat Iowa State for 15, 16 years in a row. And one of the things he always tells you, you don't want to be the first team to ever lose to Iowa State. You guys will remember that for the rest of your life. So we always went out against Iowa State and just played our hearts out because we never wanted to be that team, that first team to get beat by Iowa State. So to bring up your point, to answer your question about Illinois, when we went into the Illinois game, I had an opportunity to talk with Nick Bell. I said, Nick, I'm not going to be in the game blocking for you, man. My shoulder's injured. But you got to have a big game this game. And if you remember, Nick, I think, rushed for like, I don't know, close to 200 yards that game. He's just a monster.
Yeah, and he played as his own fullback. I mean, he just trucked everybody that got in his way. That was great.
And a lot of times, you know, it was that psychological piece where, you know, we would always depend. It was always the next man in. You know, Paul Kajaba did a great job of stepping in my place. And, but huge win. I was able to come back against Ohio State at home when we got beat at home in a very close game that I think they beat us right at the end with like 13 seconds left on the clock. Anyway, great game that solidified our opportunity to go to the Rose Bowl and what a great experience.
That's an awesome memory. I remember that game pretty well. You know, and you were talking about just, I couldn't help but just think about, you know, what kind of a speech, you know, maybe the could be helpful to this year's team. And I'm sure you've been following some of the ups and downs of this season. You know, I mean, I think one of the few teams to take it to Ohio State, but also struggling pretty mightily in the run game. If you had any advice or have you noticed anything on film that you'd want to tell your 2017 counterparts down there in the backfield? Or I don't know if you have any eligibility left. Maybe we can sneak you in there when he's in a jersey.
Well, I tell you guys what, I'd probably be good for about one play, man, and then someone would have to hold all my snacks for me while I make sure I don't pull a hammy getting out of the stands. But at any rate, I'd probably be the counterparts in the backfield. This guy's a run hard, man. I like the way Watley runs the football. He's a dangerous threat. But I think we got to get him out on the perimeter. I think running him between the tackles isn't where his strengths are. His strengths are one-on-one opportunities. So I think as they design plays for him, I would have probably looked at designing plays which gets him out on the perimeter where he's able to juke and make moves. You start running him in between the tackles, it gets really tough because we have a somewhat of an inexperienced offensive line. And unless you have a bona fide offensive line where these guys are crushing people, then he has an opportunity to get through the hole and get to that second and third level. And that's where he's most dangerous at. And if that's not happening, then I would get him out on the perimeter where he has an opportunity to make a move and get to that second and third level and then really see what he can do because he's a very delight to watch. Butler, on the other hand, is a bit more power runner. He's kind of your LaShawn Daniels type of runner that we saw last year. But this is his first time playing in the Big Ten. So it's a maturation process that he's had to go through coming out of Nevada and now playing in the Big Ten. It's a different speed of the game. It's a different type of rhythm that he needed to get into. And what we're seeing now from Butler is him kind of get into that rhythm. Now, he missed 4 or 5 games there in the middle with an injury, but he's your power guy. And I really like his style as well. He's a nice mix. He's a nice mix with him and Watley in the backfield. I would like to see them maybe throw some screen passes or the bubble screen there in the middle to these guys, because they got decent hands, but we just got to find a way to get them to that linebacker, to that safety level, because that's where they're really dangerous. And we just haven't been able to do that very successfully.
Well, Lou, I really hope the coaches are seeing some of the same things you are. It can be a little frustrating. I kind of feel like Iowa is the kind of program that really needs that thunder and lightning. So hopefully we'll see it going forward there. One thing I want to touch on, you know, you stellar career at Iowa. But, you know, I think you're a real Hall of Famer with what you've done off the field. And I'm talking specifically about, you know, the e-commerce business you started doing so much for your son who you know, struggles with Sanfilippo syndrome. Tell us a little bit about that background, Lou, and what you've been doing kind of, you know, in the years since you've stepped off the playing field.
Yeah. Well, yeah, my son, Lucas, is such an inspiration to me and my entire family. I have 3 daughters. My oldest is 26, 23, and 21. And then Lucas just turned 20. I'm bald and gray now because of my daughters. Anyone out there listening that has multiple daughters, believe me, you'll look like me in about 5 years.
Two thirds of us have the same haircut,
Lou. And mine's a sophomore in Iowa City right now, Lou, so you can imagine the worries I have.
Yes, absolutely. But back in 2012, football season was over, and it was cold outside, and I was in my basement, which is where my home office is, and I was sitting there, and I was like, man, you know, Lucas is just such an inspiration. He's been through multiple surgeries. He's had doctor's appointments, and, you know, they're poking and prodding, and this guy just always has a great smile on his face, just always smiling. And I was sitting in my office one day, and I said, man, you know, what about if I just put Lucas's name on a shirt? And just because I wanted to have something to memorialize his tenacity and his determination. So I said, I'm just going to put Lucas on his shirt. I started playing around with some drawings back in 2012 over the winter months. And this was ideally supposed to be just something to keep me busy over the winter months. And so I came up with a design. I started flipping through some old photographs that I had of the kids when they were young. And I came across a photograph of Lucas when he was a young man, and he was running backwards to throw me a pass. And he threw me a pass in the front yard. And shortly after that, he fell and fell down onto the ground. And we couldn't understand why, because, you know, we were just playing a little bit of touch football and nobody touched him. He just fell. So the image stuck with me. So a good friend of mine created an image of that, which is, symbolizes Lucas's last time he was able to walk. You know, he's 100% in a wheelchair now. And it's a progressive disorder in which, his body lacks the enzymes that breaks down what's called heparin sulfate, which is a sugar that all of our bodies produce. And he doesn't have the enzyme that comes in and extracts that. So therefore it builds up in throughout the body, in the lungs, the heart, the liver, the brain. And it's there's no treatment, no cure for it. And it's one of those progressive disorders. As a kid, he was running around like normal, and then it's just like somebody flipped the switch. So at any rate, back in 2012, I called it Lucas Gear, and then put the emblem in the middle, this drawing that you'll see on all of our products. And it slowly became a hit. And then I said, well, I work full time. I work for ACT in Iowa City, the ACT testing exam company. So I was driving to work one day. This would have been 2013 or 14, and Lucas had a pretty rough night. He had had some seizures. He had had a lot going on that evening, and just an uncomfortable night. And I'm usually the one that's up with him late at night throughout the night until he goes to school in the morning. And after this horrible night, I get him dressed and get him ready, and the bus pulls up. And by now he's kind of settled down. He's kind of sleepy, so he's in his wheelchair, and I roll him out to the bus. And as he's going up the lift bus, I said, "Hold on a minute." I said, "Now, Lucas, now when you go to school, leave those cheerleaders alone and get your homework done." And out of nowhere, he gives me this gigantic smile, man, and as if to say, "Hey, Dad, I fooled you again, buddy." And he lifts up, and the bus pulls off. So I'm driving to Iowa City from Cedar Rapids, and I'm like, this guy's just unbelievable. So unbelievable stood with me the entire trip. And all day long, unbelievable stayed with me. So I started playing around over my lunch hour, with Be Unbelievable. My wife is a fitness instructor. And she teaches at one of the local kickboxing. She's a manager at one of the local kickboxing places here in Cedar Rapids. And so we're always encouraging people to be themselves, be you. And as the more I thought about it, it really became our tagline, because that was Lucas being himself. You know, he was playing possum with me all night long. He had this horrible night. Mm-hmm. Gives me this huge smile. And then out of nowhere, he's like, "Hey, Dad, I got you." You know, that's what that smile meant to me. So we really focus on making people or encouraging people to be themselves. So I put Be Unbelievable, change the B and the U to Be You, is a different color. I put his signia logo on everything. And Be Unbelievable now is our tagline. And we put it on all kinds of active wear. So women's leggings, 1/4 zips, hoodies, you name it, headbands, sweat, everything that we have, any kind of athletic wear, casual athletic wear, has that logo on it. So it either has Lucas Gear or Be Unbelievable on it. So that's how the business derived, and we do everything on an e-commerce basis. So if you go to our website, which is www.lucasgearonline.com, you'll see some of our products, and we ship them out in 2 to 3 days, and you can come out and support our efforts to support Lucas Gear. So it's been very successful.
Hey, that's awesome. And my wife is a Beachbody coach, too, so I'm sure I'll be able to find something on there that she'll be into. I kind of get the feeling, Lou, that you and I are kind of similar, and that our wives are workout queens now, and you and I are more into, like, the donuts and beer situation. Yeah. But
I don't look like a fullback anymore. I'm kind of like a big lineman, man.
Hey, that's all right, man. You paid your dues. I got to think with then, you know, with all that you've been through with yourself and Lucas, seeing what this current team is doing with the Wave and the Children's Hospital, that's got to really warm your heart, too, and even make you feel better about being an Iowa alum. I know it does for me.
Yeah, absolutely. That tradition really has a significant meaning to so many people. And you know, it's a small gesture, but it means so much to people. And what we've found is what we've gotten such great support from the community. Iowa fans across the land have reached out to us in support of my son, Lucas. And it just tells you the quality of people that we have here in the state of Iowa. Now, we have some of the most loyal fans, students, coaches. I mean, you name it, across the board. And we've seen support from all over this country, as well as even some international folks that have supported us as well. So it means a lot when we're able to see kids who are suffering and not have an opportunity to experience, the game experience, but they still have an opportunity to watch the game from their room. Folks just don't understand the magnitude of what that means. And a simple wave or a simple, hey, how you doing, goes a long way with our kids who really struggle with disability. So I have a tremendous amount of respect for our fans, both our fans as well as the visiting teams that come into Kinnick Stadium and wave at our kids. And it means a lot to those families as well as those kids. So I say it's a great tradition, and I'm so proud to say that I'm a Hawkeye and that our fans and our community support that effort.
Awesome, Lou. Thank you so much for kind of sharing that. And if you want to say the website once again, I'm sure some of our listeners will go there. I want to go there. But yeah, thank you once again. And what was that site?
It is www.lucasgearonline.com. LucasGearOnline.com.
Excellent.
And we would love any and everybody's support. We have a lot of different products. We actually have a shipment of new stuff coming out here in the next few days. So if it says sold out right now, give us a week or two and we'll have some new products uploaded onto our site that you can purchase. And one of the things I do want to state is that, you know, one of the things, it's not so much about the profit piece of this, because the monies that we earn from this Lucas Gear goes into Lucas's account, because, and he serves as the president of Lucas Gear. And just like you and I growing up, we all had our own jobs, but unfortunately Lucas can't go out and per se get a job. So I've made Lucas the president of this organization. And
that's
as
awesome.
The president, he, this is his job. You know, he, if I come up with a design idea or a creative idea, I always run it past him and he'll give me a smile or he'll give me a frown, as whether it's or not he likes it or not. So, he makes the decisions, the funds go into his account. And if we see something that he may want, whether it be something as simple as a new pair of shoes or maybe a new jacket, or if he needs some sort of medical supplies, we always draw it from his account and he's able to buy it and on his own. So, or we buy it for him, but it comes out of that account. So, you know, it's not a profit center for us per se. It really is designed to give him an opportunity to have the best quality of life that he can have, having the type of disability that he has, and for it to be a disability that doesn't have a treatment and a cure, you know, means a lot to us to get the support.
Lou, that's an incredible story, and that's so cool to hear, and it really does tie in with the wave this year. I mean, so many great stories outside of Hawkeye football that really kind of put the sport in perspective. Once again, everybody, Lou Montgomery, Hawkeye running back, great. Thank you so much for taking your time and being on our show tonight.
Hey guys, thanks a lot. And thanks to everybody out there who's listening. And you guys, I really appreciate the fan support and appreciate everything you guys are doing. It does mean a lot to me and my family. And thanks for always being there and supporting our Hawkeyes.
You bet. I'll be in a party of eight in Lincoln this weekend or on Friday, cheering for the Hawkeyes. I hope they get around Big Red.
Yeah, we got a, you know, we've had an up and down season, man, and these guys got one more opportunity to really put an exclamation point on the season. Obviously, last week was a tough loss. Probably a game we shouldn't have lost. We got one more week to showcase our talents. And I wish those seniors the best as they head out. And the future of Hawkeye football will get better.
Right on. Really appreciate it. Thanks, Lou.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot. Thanks, everyone.
Once again, that was Lou Montgomery. We thank him. That was incredible. There's plenty more of that, over an hour's worth of material that we're just not going to cut. Everything he said was great. So we urge you, you know, if you listen to one podcast this week, this is the one. But if you listen to two, listen to that Lou Montgomery interview. Every bit of it's spectacular. Let's look ahead to Nebraska, guys. What do you guys think going in?
I mean, honestly, I have no idea. I really don't know what to say. I mean, this is such a Jekyll and Hyde team. I don't know that I've ever seen an Iowa team that could look like this. I mean, I think Ohio State is a legitimate top 10 team. Whether they overlooked Iowa or not, the thumping Iowa put on them showed that operating at full force, Iowa is a top tier, top 20 type team. The way they played against Purdue, though, they might have got beat by Illinois. I don't know. So I guess it all comes down to the mindset. I guess I'm going to hope that Kirk Ferentz, being the dean of coaches, which I think sometimes hurts us, maybe in this instance does help us. He's seen everything, been there, done everything. I'm hopeful that he can get the team motivated and come in to Lincoln with the right mindset. Nebraska is in a demoralized state as well. They should be ripe for the picking, but you know, Iowa's pretty vulnerable themselves.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with you, Tori. I mean, I don't know what box to put this team in. I could see them coming out and just rolling over Nebraska. And Nebraska, too, you know, to your point, they're shattered and they're broken. You get up a couple of scores on them, they're just going to fold like a cheap suit. But I think, you know, on the other side of the coin, this team has proven that it could probably play badly enough to lose against anybody. I actually wonder if the competing mindsets might be going in opposite directions right now. I mean, Iowa's already bowl eligible, you know, playing for what, the bottom of the bowl barrel or the second from the bottom, I think is probably what their prospects are shaking out to. Where Nebraska might be playing to send their coach out with a win. That might be the difference. So, I don't know. I don't know that being the dean of Big Ten coaching is necessarily an advantage, and I think it might actually even cut against them. But I think we should turn to our resident Nebraskite, our Omahan, and see what Bill thinks.
Lil Neber.
Yeah, I actually wanted to get your guys' opinion on this because in back-to-back weeks, Nebraska gave up 54 to Minnesota and 56 to Penn State. That's, 110 points they've surrendered in 2 weeks. So what do you guys think is fair to expect the Hawkeyes to score against a defense that terrible? Like, is 35 or 28 Oof. Something we can accept or expect Iowa to score and then
How many points are you giving to Josh Jackson? Are they even going to throw at him?
Right, right.
Determining factor, right? I mean, the guy's accounted for 14 of our last... he's accounted for more points in the last 2 weeks than the offense, right?
Right, yeah. So again, yeah, is it fair to expect our offense going against a defense that terrible to get 30 points?
I mean, the answer is we should expect that. I mean, everybody in the Big Ten has marched up and down on Nebraska. Iowa has shown flashes of ability. I mean, if you can't run and move on these guys, who are you going to run and move on? So 35 points might be kind of high, but, you know, I think 28's not out of the realm.
Yeah, I don't know. Just based on what I've seen the past couple weeks, it seems like any inspiration and any spark that we had against Ohio State is just gone. I don't know how we're going to come up with 10 points. I'm picking Iowa to score 10 points, but I don't know how we're going to get it, quite frankly.
I think we're good for 14 points, and I think the defense is good for 7. So I think that's how we get to 21. But no, we're not going to put up 40, 50 points on these guys. We're not Northwestern now, Bill. Come on. Let's not get greedy.
I'm just so sick and tired of being the cure for what ails bad teams. You know, Purdue, 16 sacks on the season. They get 6 against Iowa.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I'll be there. I'll be there with 7 other Hawk fans. So, you know, we'll be cheering.
So do we need to then roll to our predictions? Is that next year? You know, do we want to talk about, or maybe save it for next week, is talk about, I know there's no such thing as a hot seat when you're talking about Kirk Ferentz, but is there a warming of the seat?
See, the analogy I used was a car seat warmer on 1. Like you've just, it's a little nippy out there, a little fog. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just get it going in case you need to heat it up later.
What do you think, Bill? I think he's there for the duration, but I think the duration may not be as long as it looked a couple weeks ago.
I think he's there for the duration, but only because he's coaching at Iowa. I think any other school, you know, I'm 50 miles up the road from one that's booting their coach in 4 days.
Yeah.
He's the luckiest guy in the world. He's shown flashes, but this doesn't fly at Miami or you know, even Michigan State or something.
Well, he's obviously an above average human being. I mean, just, you know, looking at his
absolutely. You know, I don't think we have to,
you know, and all that stuff. And I think people get a little sensitive when you talk about, you know, not being happy with the coaching, but you know, I think he's demonstrating that he's probably more like a B-, C-plus type of coach, at least from an X's and O's perspective.
Yeah, I don't think 19 years in you have to, you know, put that asterisk up there. Like, you know, we're talking about on the field strictly, because I'd be honored to sit down and talk with Kirk Ferentz. He's a swell guy. But that said, swell doesn't, you know, excuse the fact that we lost a 4-6 Purdue, and we just are constantly teams rebound.
The crazy thing though is, and I wrote this out on a brief post earlier today on one of the Hawkeye boards, is that if you look at the arc of his career, he has this uncanny ability to time the peaks of his program right when the natives are the most restless. And that even starts from the beginning. I mean, I in 2000, after the first 3 years, and nobody knew who this guy was, and I thought he was dead man walking. Mm-hmm. I swear I thought he was dead man walking. Then 2001, they get good enough. They get to a bowl. They win a bowl. It looks good. Then you're like, okay, maybe this guy, 2002, bam, undefeated season. Something the program's never done. So you're like, okay, all right, this guy's not too bad. 2003, rolling along. 2004, another Big Ten championship. Started slow. Then 2005, you kind of underachieve. 2006 and 2007 are a disaster. And then you're thinking, all right, well, now the guy's on the hot seat. Definitely, you know, I mean, he had that nice run in the early 2000s, but now what? Then 2008, Sean Green amazes everybody, wins a major award. Then the next year, you're challenging for the frickin' college football playoff. The first one, you win one game, you're right in the discussion. Ricky Stanzi doesn't get injured, who knows? Now here we are, we're on a roll. 2010, amazing team, tons of talent, not quite there, but you're not going to give up on anything. 11, 12 gets down, shittier.
13 sucked, 14 sucked.
13 sucked, 14 though.
No,
no, like 2001.
No, 13 was
smell.
13 was better.
Yep. Eight
no,
and
no,
five,
no, 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 no. 14 was crap. 14 was a disaster. 14 was 7-6. 13 was the one where we finished out beating Nebraska on the road, and yeah,
got our asses handed to us in the bowl game against LSU.
Exactly. Right. So it's all looking,
and then bam, he hit another undefeated. But this is what I'm saying. So you mark my words. Iowa goes 10-2 or 11-1 next year, wins the West Division, or you know, is almost right there in the West Division, and it's rinse repeat. I mean, you can't make an objective case that coach in a vacuum should be fired.
The guy's like Eddie Haskell. He's just—he's bad news, and he knows how to brown nose the right people at just the right time. What about just consistently good?
He's like that guy at work that's always, you know, doing his best when the boss is watching, but everybody knows he's kind of just spending his time at the water cooler.
I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying, Bill, but I'm saying from an objective standpoint, that's an unfireable person. You can't be, you just can't.
Well, so here's a couple of, let's play a little game, because I've been playing with some numbers here recently, and I'll just kind of throw some stuff out. I had a little bit of some interesting observations, so if you don't want mind real quickly, fact or fiction, let's play. Fact or fiction, Kirk Ferentz's teams get better as the season goes on. Tori, what are your thoughts? Fact or fiction?
Historically, fact, current, fiction.
Bill, take a swing.
I actually know the actual answer to this, so I'm not going to be any fun. It's total fiction. His winning percentage in November is far lesser than winning percentage in October.
Bill, yes, you ruined the surprise. Spoiler alert.
I apologize. Sorry.
Ferentz actually, his best month is October. I mean, if you throw out August, I mean, he's got five games in either August 30th or 31st. But for the most part, yeah, he's barely breaking 500 in November. October's pretty solid. September's pretty solid. But there's, of course, a lot of cupcake eating there. One of the things I was doing earlier was throwing out the outliers. So I was throwing out his two best seasons, which I don't know if you can call it Bill's best season was 2015 and 2002, and his worst seasons objectively, I mean, if you take away the first two seasons, his worst seasons were 2000 and I believe 2007 and 2012. Right. And you throw that stuff out and you've really got somebody. And I know a lot of people are not going to want to hear this. You've really got somebody who is struggling to get to 500. And, you know, that's math. You know, I know that folks want to tell a story. They want to tell a narrative. I think, Tori, you know, you explained it very well, is they want to talk about these kind of ups and downs, the highs and lows, the wave coming across the shore and then kind of going back out to sea only and the tide coming back in. But really, if you kind of stand back and look at the portfolio of the career, you know, you kind of wonder if there is something to be said about kind of, you know, outliving your relevance. You know, you start off as the disruptor, the person who's coming on to make a name for themselves to shake things up, and then you become kind of the mainstream, and then you become the textbook that everybody's disrupting against. And I think, you know, we're seeing that with a lot of young coaches coming on the scene and a lot of teams hiring to that mid to late 30s. And objectively, that group, that cohort that Brian Ferentz should be in as well, right?
Would Kirk Ferentz with the same team in 2017 versus, you know, 2003 Kirk Ferentz with the same talent, who's winning that game? Because, you know, 02 to 04, I remember, you know, we were a threat to block a punt or a field goal every single time. You know, remember 2002? We scored every single way possible. That was blocking an extra point and running it back for two. And
that was
blocking
the Purdue
punts,
game, wasn't
blocking
it?
Field goals. Exactly. Yeah, we did pretty much all of that, Antoine Allen against Purdue. You know, contrast that with 2017. I think 2003 Kirk with the exact same talent rolls 2017.
Well, and I mean, I think you've hit the nail on the head on something there, Bill, is that I think in some ways Kirk Ferentz is a victim of his own success. And you even see this in microcosm within a season. You know, you've got Ohio State coming into town. He knows they're full of 4 and 5 stars that are better athletes. So we're going to throw everything we got at him. We're going to go against our tendencies. We're going to do that. But when he looks at Purdue or even Wisconsin, which he wants to be a mirror of, the thought process is, you know, well, we can go toe-to-toe with these guys, so we're just going to do what we do and, you know, try to win, and we'll lean on execution. Well, you know, in 03, 02, fighting for his job, fighting, you know, with a much less talented team without as much of an identity, that's how he had to approach the whole season. So, I mean, I think that risk aversion is something that's been learned over time.
Well, and I think to some extent, Tori, I think you're all right. And I think there's also this part where if you are successful in changing the game, then you become the game that other people have to change. And, you know, I think there's something to be said about this. You know, I mean, you remember when he first came on, everybody's like, oh, nobody has an answer for Kirk Ferentz and his zone blocking. You know, he brought that over from the pros and you know, okay, well, that's not new anymore. And now folks have kind of gotten used to that and they're moving on to the next thing. I'm just pointing out that at a certain point, if you're successful, you become the thing that you become the status quo or the mainstream. And that's not a bad thing. It's just something that, you know, look, there's a reason why other teams aren't holding on to 20-some year coaches. So, but let's...
I think all enterprises at some point have to reinvent themselves, yeah, is what you're saying, Jim. And that's what we need. Well, whether it's here or elsewhere.
Yeah, I think the point is what got you to this point isn't what's going to carry you in the future. So, but let's try and pivot off of this and take one last look at the Nebraska game coming up, because we do have to make our picks. I think, you know, since we're all kind of, you know, in the doghouse right now, I will go ahead and put myself out there as having a 24 points, but I think that there's at least one defensive score in there. So let me think and say Iowa wins 24-17. Nebraska makes it look good, send Mike Riley out, but they just come up short. And I think the pick to click, I'll go with Fant. I'll take Bill's guy.
Oh, okay. Sneaky. Tori and I were talking a little bit, and he asked me if it would surprise me if Iowa scored 55 in this game. And no, it wouldn't. But it wouldn't surprise me more if Iowa lost it 24-10. And I think that's what's going to happen. I think they send Mike Riley out on a good note. I think Josie Jewell makes the Butkus Award voters look like an idiot, and he's our pick to click. But I don't know how we're going to get more than 24, and Nebraska's got too many good receivers for Josh Jackson alone to cover. Manny Rugumba has disappeared this season. Matt Hankins is too inexperienced, too young. Our safeties aren't up to par, and I think that is a losing recipe. So sorry, Hawks, but they're going to finish the season 6-6.
24-10, is that what you said, Bill, with Josie
Yep.
Jewell? Okay.
Yep.
Tori, what do you got?
Wow, it's really crazy. I think Bill and I are very much on the same wavelength. I actually was going to take Josie Jewell. Now I can't for the exact same reason. I think
gotcha.
The slight's going to get him, but that's a good one. I actually had 19-13 Nebraska. I think, Jim, you actually nailed it. I think if this game comes down, this is almost like a bowl game. It's on a weird day. You know, it's this game's going to be about who has
also,
the motivation
to be there.
Also, it's
going to be 70 at kickoff.
There you go. So it's going to be like a bowl game, and we've seen what Iowa's done in bowl games recently, and it doesn't look good. I don't like their mindset going into this one.
Ouch.
I think Lou hit the nail on the head when he said they're a little demoralized and like a kicked dog right now. So I think they're going to limp into the end of this season and make Bill go home really unhappy. I guess I have to pick to click. I'll go with AJ Epiniza. Maybe he'll give us a little hope going into next season.
Yep, sad state of affairs when 2/3 of us are picking the bad guys, but I guess it is what it is.
Well, you guys are going to be super happy to give me the gnome next week then. look, it goes back to what Tori said. This is a Jekyll and Hyde team. You could see him coming out. I mean, would you honestly be shocked if they came out and rolled up 45 on these guys?
No, and that's what I told Bill. I said, the way I look at this game, Iowa either blows their doors off and is like, you know, screw you all. We are the team that beat Ohio State. Sorry, we let Wisconsin beat us twice.
Yeah.
And just rolls Nebraska. That totally within the realm of possibility. If things start going south, though, I think they're going to go sideways on Iowa bad. And they're just going to look fun bad all day. The punt, you know, not being able to snap the ball, not catching punts, the kind of crap we've seen for the last 2 weeks. And that will lead you quickly to defeat.
You know, that's funny, Tori, because you just you know, you really touched on it with me is this idea that they just, you know, you can't really put these guys objectively. This should be a really fun team to watch if you didn't have an emotional investment as a fan, right? Because you absolutely have no idea what they're going to do. There's no identity. There's no.
And they play hard. They do. Play hard.
There's some raw talent.
I would never ever watch this team play if they were Ball State or Michigan State.
If I told you this team could score three,
unwatchable football.
If I told you this team could score three, or this team could score 52, and you honestly don't know at kickoff which is going to show up, I mean, you would be on the edge of your seat at least for a quarter.
I would watch Maction over this team.
Well, you know, I mean, Iowa's disappointing, but one thing is for sure is that this is probably one of our better podcast episodes, and it has nothing to do with us.
Everybody go listen to Lou Montgomery. I can't emphasize that enough.
All right. Well, let's hope for the best, guys. And, Bill, I hope that you get the last laugh there in the stands in Lincoln. I know you'd gladly give up a gnome to treasure that sweet victory in the sea of red. So with that, we'll put a button on this week's episode, and we'll end up with saying, on Iowa.
Go Hawks.
Beat Nebraska.
Hell
please.
Yeah. Please.
With conviction.
See you guys. Happy Thanksgiving.